Amateur Traveler, episode 840. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about canals and castles, locks and luxury, artists and an aqueduct, as we go cruising in a luxury hotel barge on the Canal de Bruyère in the Loire Valley of France. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about barge cruising. I'd like to welcome to the show Rose Palmer from quilttripping.com, who's come to talk to us about a region of France that, surprisingly, we have not talked about in the 17 years of the show, and that's the Loire Valley. Rose, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And what's your connection with the Loire Valley, first of all?
I did a trip last summer. It was a barge cruise on the Canal de Bruyère with European Waterways that took us through a portion of the Loire Valley. And it was a wonderful experience that I'm happy to share with your audience.
Excellent. And so we're going to talk a little bit about barges again, which we haven't talked about in a couple years on this show. And Rose, why should someone go barge tripping through the Loire?
That is a very good question. So whenever I first mentioned this type of a cruise to people, they tend to think of it as a river cruise. And I often have to clarify that, no, these aren't rivers. These are actually much smaller. These are canals that were put in place in France starting in the 17th century. And they were developed to connect the major waterways and act as a form of transportation and as a means of transporting goods from all over France, primarily to Paris and the king and the royalty, but basically to all the consumers in Paris. Now those canals are no longer needed for transportation in that form, and they're used for recreation. And companies like European Waterways have taken these old barges that were had once transported logs and coal and all sorts of goods and turned them into luxury floating hotels that and travel slowly through a fairly small region of France. So you're doing very slow travel that is very more intensive and more focused on just one area. And in the process, you're tasting great food, you're drinking good wine, and you're seeing some unique destinations that are within an easy drive from the canal that you might not as easily do maybe on your own, especially if you don't speak French.
Excellent. And you talk about slow travel. Whenever you're doing travel where you can walk alongside and keep up or get ahead, we're definitely talking slow travel.
Extremely slow, exactly. The barges have bicycles on board. The towpaths that were once used to pull the canals are now very amenable to bicycling. And you can either bike or you can walk alongside the barge from one lock to the other. More often than not, you'll be a lot faster, even walking, because it takes time to get through these locks. There's a lot of lock to get through each day, and they have to wait for the water to come up, for the gates to open. And then even when the barge moves, it moves slowly. So you can easily walk and meet the barge at the next lock or two locks down, or bike a mile or two, or kilometer or two or three, and you have an agreed upon meeting place, and they'll wait for you, and at the next lock, you get back on and have a glass of wine. Local wine.
The wine, I suspect, is going to be a theme, since we're barge cruising here in France. When I pitched going on a barge in France to my wife, a luxury barge hotel is, I believe, the correct term. The term she focused in on is barge, and the term you should focus it on is luxury.
Exactly. I think luxury boat maybe might be a better floating luxury hotel. And to give you an example of the level of luxury, on this particular cruise that I was on, we had four crew members and four passengers. And the barge itself only holds eight. So it had four cabins. So we're talking very attentive service, very personalized service, an intimate setting. And to be honest, by the end of the week, I felt like the crew were more my friends.
Excellent. What kind of itinerary did you do?
So the first day we started at the small town of Argy, and I apologize to every French person in the world for butchering the French language. And Montargis is often referred to as the Little Venice of the north or of one of the little Venice towns of France because of all the canals and all the bridges over the canal. So that's where we boarded in the afternoon. We were greeted with canapés and champagne to give you another idea of the luxury level. And then we started cruising through the town and down the canal, the Briard. So this whole cruise, the six-day cruise in the Loire Valley, was on the Canal de Briard, which cuts through one portion of the Loire Valley and that sort of parallels and follows the Loire River. One of the interesting elements as we cruise out of town of Montargis is that we passed under a beautiful bridge, ornate green metal design bridge, and we learned that it was one of the bridges, that were designed and built by Gustav Eiffel.
Okay.
That was
so it was an iron bridge.
It was an iron bridge, very pretty. The other bridges, we flew past under quite a few other bridges, but this one in particular stood out because of its. And once I was told that he designed it, and I looked at it, oh yeah, I see the similarity between this and the ironwork of the Eiffel Tower and the kind of the intricacy of the metalwork. So that was interesting.
First off, you say you started in Montargis, and that means that you started at the northern end of the canal, if I'm looking at the map right. And correct. So you were cruising uphill. Every time you went into the canal, it raised your level up to the next level.
Exactly. We went uphill until we reached, midway through the week, we reached the area of the Seven Locks, which was the high point of this canal. And then we did go through Seven Locks, but we went through seven new locks, meaning that they were built in the 1800s, as opposed to the old locks, which we cruised by and that you can see from the canal, which were built in the 1600s. And then once we went through those seven historic locks, then we started going downhill. And so now we had water in the lock and then it would drain out and then we would continue. So it was the opposite of the first part of the week. Yes. Yes, exactly. Good call. So the first day when we boarded on the barge was later in the afternoon. So we really only had time for a little bit of cruising before we stopped at night. So the barge does not cruise at night. It pulls over and docks and then you can again go out and walk and explore a little bit the area around where we're docked. We have dinner, drinks, etc. The next day, after some more scenic cruising in the morning and either walking or biking, our excursion was the Chateau de la Boussière. And again, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And this was a very, very pretty chateau. For me, almost if I envisioned a chateau that maybe Sleeping Beauty might have been in, your typical French palace type of structure. This is what that reminded me of. The chateau has a very long history. It was actually first built on Roman foundations in the 12th century, and then it was rebuilt in the 16th century, and then renovated again in the 18th. Typical of the history of all of these old buildings in France and across Europe. Mm-hmm. And we had a tour of the chateau by our guide from the barge, who walked us around and told us about the history of the building and the chateau and the grounds and explained what some of the functions of some of the outbuildings were, some of the history. The chateau in particular played an important role in some of the wars in France and in the history of France. So we covered that as well. And what I did forget to mention is we started the tour of that chateau first with a cooking demo by the chef from our boat and with some of the locally grown ingredients. And she demonstrated how to make something called sauce Diane with mushrooms and wine, of course, and cream and butter and onions and all that. Mm-hmm. And then we tasted that. And that was in the orangery of the chateau. And then we toured the chateau. So one of the interesting things about this particular castle is that it's also called the Fisherman's Castle because of a vast collection of fishing paraphernalia. One of the owners had a fascination with fish hooks and with fishing poles and all the various things that go into fishing. So there's cases of fishing poles and displays of a variety of these, some of them quite large fish hooks, and then all sorts of other things that fishermen use, which I'm not a fisherman, didn't necessarily.
Okay.
What did resonate with me, however, because I'm a cook and I like to cook, was when we went through the really big kitchen, probably very typical of a kitchen from a chateau that's that old from that period. But, and again, the period from being mostly the 18th century, but still you had a large wooden fireplace and then a large stove with all these little pockets of ovens that were used for cooking and baking, large wooden tables. And they were cooking and baking we were told, for 40 to 50 people. And they're using wood, and they have to bring in, they did have water that they had to pump in, but I'm still thinking, sometimes I have trouble baking a cake with my thermostated oven that with a digital readout at 350 degrees. How did they, were they able to create all these beautiful, delicate pastries and all the other French delicacies that they're known for without a digital readout? But they were. So I really found that the touring, like the kitchen, very interesting because it was something I could relate to.
Okay.
The other very nice thing about this particular castle is that, and again, why it reminded me of a fairy tale castle is because of its large moat around the chateau. And it looked like you would expect a French castle to look like. And so we had, after our sort of official tour where we learned all about the history and the functions of the different rooms, we had some free time where we could walk around the park setting around the chateau and see it from different perspectives. And so that was very enjoyable. So I was there in June, early June, and the weather was very pleasant, not too hot yet, actually quite cool in the evening. So it was very nice to have a little bit of time to walk around and explore the park. If you're on your own visiting the site, you would have a lot more time than we did, and you would probably be able to walk much more along the different paths of the parkland than we had time to. But it certainly gave us an introduction to what this looked like.
And you mentioned that your tour guide took you in. So you had four crew, and I'm going to guess, tell me if I'm wrong here. You got a captain, you've got a chef, you've got your tour guide who's going to be driving a van that is going to keep up with you and take you out to various places. And then you've got a steward or somebody who's taking care of the cabins and serving the dinners and things like that. Am I in the right area?
Exactly. So our guide was also the first mate.
Got it. Okay.
The right hand, in this case, man, to the captain. And then our young lady, who was the steward, took care of everything, kind of all the hotel related elements of staying at the barge. Yes.
When we did the last episode we did on barge cruising, talking about the Canal de Midi in southern France, we had a chance to talk to the barge owner who was on the boat that time, as well as the captain. And he said 10, 20 years ago, if you went on a barge cruise, you spent all your time on the boat or on the towpaths. And it was very relaxing and charming, but people found there wasn't enough to do. And so they really added that role of the tour guide, somebody who can take you out to the different castles and things like that. Because you had to get in the van, I'm assuming, and drive a few miles to get to the castle. It wasn't right on the canal.
No. Each of the daily excursions that we did, other than the one that was to the nearby local market on the last day, we were driven in a van. The van was always parked right there by the barge. So we had to walk all of all of 10 feet. It was so challenging. And then they would drive us to the site that we were seeing on that particular day and then drive us back. So it was really tough, I got to tell you. Yeah.
Well, it might have got tougher through the week as you're eating with the cooking of a French chef. Okay. Excellent. What next?
So one other element that was very nice with the Chateau de Bussière were the gardens. They call it a kitchen garden. Not exactly what I envision of as a kitchen garden.
I believe a kitchen garden is when you're raising things that are edible.
Okay. They do raise things that are edible, but it was a very, very large, very typically French, formally designed garden that were on the grounds of the chateau. And it was one of the showcases of the chateau is this beautiful garden. We're talking hedges, so beds that are outlined by small little boxwood hedges, just like you would see and expect from a typical French garden. And then within each of those beds, you had the different vegetables and fruits and strawberries and raspberries and fruit trees. What was especially nice about this particular visit is that as we were touring the garden with our guide, the Countess de Chasseval was out in her garden tending it. Older lady, and this is her pride and joy, is this garden. We were told she was out there every day pruning, or not so much pruning, but maybe weeding, picking some fruits, picking vegetables. And as a matter of fact, when we were there, she was picking some of the fresh strawberries, and she shared them with us. Just really lovely, lovely lady. Didn't speak any English, so our guide translated for us. And basically she told us that this is her joy, this is her love, is this garden. And so she still comes out here, bikes out here. So the family no longer lives in the chateau. The family has owned the chateau since the revolution, I believe, the French Revolution. But they currently no longer live in the actual main part of the chateau. There's a smaller side house that they live in, and the chateau now is used for tourism and visitors. But the garden is still, I guess you could say, it's still her baby. She comes out every day, tends to it, and was very happy to share some of her fresh-picked strawberries that she had just picked with the four of us. So that was just delightful. The next day, after having cruised down the Canal de Brière some more in the morning, we backtracked a little bit back to the town of Montargis where we started. And you may ask, why did we not tour that when we first arrived? And the reason is because our tour started on a Sunday evening, and we were told that not much is open on Sunday. So they wanted to make sure that when we went into town that there were shops open and cafes and restaurants and all that open. So we backtracked back to where we started from, which really didn't take very long by van because we hadn't really moved that far on the canal. And we got a tour of the town of Montargis, which was just adorable. It was very clear to see why it was called the Venice of the North. Lots of bridges, lots of beautiful perspective like you might see in Venice, down the canal with one bridge and another. But what made it very pretty, at least for me, was just all the different flower arrangements and planters that were filled with flowers everywhere. And even though it was only early June, we're talking planters overflowing with flowers. And they had put rowboats in the canal with plants and flowers blooming and spilling over. So you're looking out over this canal, and not only do you have the scenic setting of a canal of all these beautiful old buildings reflected in the water of the canals, but then you have this old, very photogenic rowboat flowing over with colorful flowers. And what we learned is that there's a sort of a France-wide competition among the towns and villages for the most flower-filled and the prettiest towns that decorate their town with flowers, and they're quite competitive about getting these awards. It sounded very much on the level of Michelin stars, but instead for decorating their towns florally. So we started our tour. Our guide and driver from the barge, Brian, took us to the top of the hill of the town where we talked about and learned about another old fortress that was up there, and parts of which were still fairly authentic from the 14th century, and told us about the history and showed us around, showed us what was still old from and left over from the 14th century and what had been rebuilt. Unfortunately, we couldn't really go into the building because currently it's now used as a school, so we really were only able to walk around the outside. And then from there, we walked slowly downhill towards town. We walked by the quote-unquote newer building with the town hall, which is from the 15th century, so slightly a little bit newer. And from there, then in town, we went to the Church of St. Madeleine. Beautiful church. And, you know, France is known for its beautiful Gothic churches with its soaring ceilings and large beautiful stained glass windows, and that's exactly what we saw here. Was another wonderful example of a big, airy Gothic church and some gorgeous collection of stained glass windows. The goal of our walk into town was the confectionery shop of the House of Mazette. And they have the distinction of being the oldest confectionery, that the oldest confection in France was developed here in 1636. And it's called a praline, but it's not the kind of praline that we might think of like from New Orleans.
Okay.
The praline that they refer to is almonds that have been toasted and then combined with caramel. This was a secret recipe that was developed in 1636, and it's still secret to this day, and it's still used to this day. And we were taken on a behind-the-scenes tour of the facility, and we had a nice little private tasting of some of the different confections that Mazet makes. We were taken through a tasting of the history of the chocolates and confections over the years of the Mazet Confectionery Company. And it ended with a pastry that they make. So now not only have they moved from making chocolates and small little confectionery bite-sized candies, they had also now recently moved into making more French pâtisserie type pastries. And one of the things we tasted was just an amazing little choux pastry that was filled with cream that had been infused with the flavorings of the praline and then topped with some of the crunched up pieces of the caramel almond topping. And it was just fantastic. Was one of the best thing desserts I've tasted, I think, in my whole life, to be honest.
A couple of questions for you. One is, you mentioned that Montargis was in a contest of the beautiful villages, and I'm wondering if that's Les Plus Beaux Villages de France, which we've talked about on the show before, the prettiest villages in France, or if it's a different context.
When I looked it up, I found it's called something called Villes Fleury.
Oh, okay. So it's a separate one just for maybe flowers. Okay. Interesting. Okay.
That's what I assumed it was, but maybe it is, because it is all about decorating the towns with flowers.
Okay. So it's more specific. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the other one is, I looked up the website for Mazet, and they offered me, do I want to accept cookies? Unfortunately, they only meant browser cookies. So that was disappointing.
Oh, I think that they do deliver.
I see that. I see that.
I totally forgot about the fact that they do ship at Christmas time, because that would have been a nice Christmas present for me. I guess I don't really need an excuse. I can just order them anytime. But yeah, it was a lovely town to walk around. There were still some of the streets, some of the older streets still had half-timbered houses with the half-timbered type of architecture that had been preserved and restored. Flowers everywhere, just gorgeous flowers. And just very quiet and peaceful. We only had a couple hours in town. We had a little bit of time on our own to walk around, but I could easily see myself spending a full day there, if not more. It seemed to be quite popular with French tourists, and that's one of the hallmarks that I found with this cruise, and even the other cruise that I've done with European Waterways, is that they take us to places that are maybe more popular with the French visiting their own home country and not necessarily where international tourists might go. So you get more of kind of a local feel for an area that you wouldn't be able to do on your own, I think. And that's one of the things that really appeals to me about traveling with them.
Okay. Excellent. Where to next?
Where to next? So you mean after all the good food, after
absolutely
each excursion, then you go back to the barge and they greet you with a lovely little refreshing drink, and of course there's always a good lunch and a dinner involved, and depending on how much time there is that day, a little bit more biking and walking, not enough walking. So we ended that day with some more barge cruising, and we parked the barge at the Seven Locks, the historic Seven Locks. It's a town where the historic Seven Locks are, and they were part of the construction of the Briard Canal from 1642. But as I mentioned before, the newer locks were built in the 1800s. And what our captain and guide told us is that the reason they needed to put in new locks is mostly for an efficiency standpoint. These seven locks, when you see them, they truly are a step, and they're very close together. It almost looks like a stair step for giant legs. And so what happened is they would have to wait, and seven boats would fill these locks, and they would get filled at one time and then go through, and then they'd have to wait for another batch to go through the locks, and it just wasn't very efficient. So then they diverted the canal and put in a new set of locks that are a little bit further apart and with a little bit more modern technology, or at least 1800s technology. And so now the next day we toured, or as we cruised down the canal, we passed these historic locks, and that was one of the highlights of the cruise. It was part of the, they're a national historic monument in France. Very pretty setting, too.
Okay.
As I said, the next day, then we started with cruising past the seven locks. And after cruising for a couple of hours, again, we stopped. And the site and excursion for the day was actually one of my favorites, if not the favorite for me. And that was the Chateau Rosa Bonheur. And even to the French, I believe, Rosa is not as well known anymore today. She's an artist, and she was very well known in her time in the mid-1800s. Very talented woman, came from a family of artists. Her father, an artist, her older siblings were all artists and sculptors, ran in the genes. And her particular interest and talents went to painting animals. So she really was drawn to studying animals and their anatomy and drawing them in very realistic detail and not so much to people.
Okay.
And she was apparently quite well known, one of the first and best known female artists of her time. And she was very well known across Europe and even here in the States. And you will find her best and most famous painting, which is called The Horse Fair, is actually hangs in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And that painting gave her the funds to buy this chateau where she then lived for the rest of her life and where she painted. And she would actually go to the horse markets, study the animals, and do drawings. And she did that for, we were told on our tour, for about a year and a half, and do sketches of the horses and the details of the horses for her paintings. And one of the things that sort of made her stand out is in order to be able to go to these markets and make it more comfortable and easier for her, she took to wearing pants, which actually was not allowed for women to wear pants. So we were told she had to get a special dispensation to be allowed to wear pants at that time. I read about her afterwards, and in listening to the tour about her life and her history, she was quite, for her time, very, we would certainly call her a feminist, very forward-thinking, very liberated, very, we would say, very modern, maybe, which is maybe why it was probably my favorite excursion, because here was somebody that I had not known about and yet could relate to. And in the chateau, we toured her studio, which still has all the paraphernalia from when she worked there, and also a painting of her that was made by her friend, who was also an artist. And so it's a life-size portrait of her and stands there. So you can easily stand in the room and just look around and almost feel like she had just walked out, because all the things that she had around her and used as models, and that all the equipment that she used for painting and drawing are still there in the same condition and in the same positions that probably that when she was there. So it was very easy to feel a connection to this artist, even though she was almost 200 years ago, 150 years ago.
Well, and fortunately for her, while wearing pants may not have been as acceptable in her time, I noted that when we were talking about Montargis, that's one of the towns that Joan of Arc went through, and part of the reason she was burned at the stake was for wearing men's clothes. It's relaxed a bit, at least, since then.
Thank God. Quite a bit, yes. The other element that I really enjoyed about this excursion, and again, this was one of these little private moments that European Waterways sets up with their tours, is mm-hmm. they had set up a special luncheon for us in what had been Rosa Bonheur's study. Now, mm-hmm. if you're going to go to her chateau on your own, they have a lovely tea room. And at first I thought that's where we were going to be eating, because we walked mm-hmm. through it, and where you can have cakes and coffee and small bites to eat. For our group, they had set up a special luncheon that the chef had prepared that was just absolutely not just wonderfully tasting, but just so beautifully presented that for me it was as much a feast for my taste buds as it was for my eyes, just because it was so colorful. And of course, it's because it's France, each course was paired with its own wine. It's France, and it's a luxury barge cruise. That goes without saying that there's always a lot of wine with each meal. That was a very enjoyable day for me.
Excellent.
So that day we ended with a little bit more cruising down to where we parked for the night in actually a series of lakes, recreational lakes that were part of the canal that are called La Gazon. Again, I'm probably butchering the name, but just very scenic, quiet, or almost like a nature reserve, really, that area. It's used for recreation. The bike paths at this point, if I remember right, the tow paths weren't as accessible anymore, but there were some walking paths that we could take around the lake, and just a really very quiet and peaceful setting to enjoy the evening in.
Okay.
Okay, so next day. Let's see, next day. A little bit more cruising, a little bit more biking, a little bit more walking, a little bit more eating and drinking. Notice there's a theme here, right? This is not for everybody. Some people like to be busy and doing something all the time. What I enjoy about these European waterway barge cruises, for me, I find that there's a nice balance between just having downtime and watching the canal and watching the water go by and just watching the scenery go by slowly. And activity. So yes, you're not busy all the time, but at the same time, once I step on that barge and we start moving, I can literally physically feel myself just relaxing. My heart rate slows down. I find my breathing slows down and I just breathe this huge internal sigh of relief as we slowly start cruising down the canal. And there's something mesmerizing and calming and about just sitting there and just going slowly and seeing all the trees and the bushes and all the greenery slide by you. And it truly is bucolic. We might pass through a village here and there, but this canal and the other one that I've done, and I think I'm presuming most of the canals that the barges cruise on, are in the countryside of France. So you're not going through, through the big cities. So it's a very easy, pleasant, comfortable way to see countryside and scenery that would be very difficult to see any other way.
The canals do go into the major cities, or at least historically did. I can think of walking along the Canal de Saint-Martin in Paris, but it doesn't tend to be where these barge cruises go. They tend to go out in the countryside, yeah.
Yeah, they might start or end there, but they make a point of having going through the quiet countryside.
I think you're right that... So the two things in terms of, is this the trip for you? One is, it's not cheap, and so you've got to be able to afford it. And two is that it is a slower pace. You tend to do one excursion a day, and it's a good trip to go with somebody you want to talk to or to bring a book along, but it is more relaxing. And that may be too relaxing for some people. That's okay. We just want you to know what it's like so you can decide if it's for you.
Exactly. Yeah. So maybe you might not want to bring your teenage children along.
Might.
Or then again, if they see how much wine is being served, they may change their mind. So speaking of wine, our next day's excursion was we went to the town of Sancerre. It gives the name to the Sancerre wine region. We had our own tour of the Perrier Winery, La Perrier Winery, not to be confused with
the water people. Yep.
Yeah, totally different. And what makes this particular winery interesting is, again, it's what you would expect a winery to be. It's in a cave in the mountainside. So their whole production process, not just the storage of the casks, but the whole production process is inside this big, huge cave. They have acres of hillside with grapes that they grow for their wines, and then they take the grapes and turn them into some wonderful white wines and also some reds. So we got a tour of the winery, and when it walked us through the whole winemaking process. The whites are made in stainless steel, the reds are aged in oak, and then the reds in particular are aged in the typical French winery environment that you would expect. This big, old, deep cave that you walk through. It's a big metal door with a huge lock on it that you walk through to get in there. And they've been using this cave for centuries to age these wines. And at one end of the cave, they have their forget the French name for them, but they're reserve bottles and caked with about a quarter inch of dust and growth on them because they've been sitting there to, as their reserve to age and growing this mold. And it's actually part of what gives some of the flavors to the oak and the wine, I believe. But it was seeing this, going on the tour of the winery was just fascinating. And then, of course, it's a winery, so you end with a wine tasting, naturally. And not
It's a
being...
dirty, thankless job, but somebody has to do it.
Exactly, yeah, someone has to do it. But what I really found fascinating about this particular wine tasting, and I've done a number of them, I'm not a particularly connoisseur or have a great palate, but what I found that they did a great job with was showing the impact of terroir on the final flavor of the wine. The way the hillside...
And the terroir, climate, the soil, all of those things that go into the
exactly.
wine.
In this case, and particularly the different minerality of the soils, or the
Sure.
underlying, not really soil, but the underlying stone and the type of it's limestone or something else. And so they, we had two bottles of wine, of the same Sauvignon Blanc wine, grape. One was grown in one type of soil with lime, and another one was maybe more clay. Both wines made in the exact same way, but they tasted totally different. And was the first time that I actually had a wonderful example as I was tasting these wines of the impact of the terroir on the final product. People always talk about it, but it's hard to, if you're not a sommelier, it's hard to really understand that impact. And this was a great example. So very enjoyable. And then after our wine tasting, we continued through and toured the town. Lovely little town, sits on top of a hillside looking out over a valley that the patchwork of fields of grapes grown on the hillside. And as you might expect, the town has a number of tasting rooms where you can taste the different local wines. I could easily have spent at least a day there, probably more. We walked through it rather quickly. I would have, to be honest, would have preferred to have a little bit more time to enjoy the setting. But next time, when I go back on my own, I can spend some more time there. After we toured Sancerre, we went back to the boat and then cruised just a little bit to the highlight of the Briare Canal, which is the Briare Aqueduct. And where's the name of the town?
Châtillon-de-Loire?
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Yes. Okay. So sounds like you've had some French training.
A little bit. It doesn't mean my high school French teacher would be proud, but...
The Briare Aqueduct is the highlight of this particular six-day cruise. It's another one of Gustave Eiffel's construction projects. And again, when somebody tells you that he was responsible for part of the construction and design, you go, oh, yeah, I see that.
So this is an elevated bridge that holds a canal, not a bridge over a canal, but a canal over something else.
Exactly. It's kind of funny when you think about it, because it's a bridge with water that goes over a river so that the boat can go over the river to the other side. But, and you may ask, why don't they just use the river? And that would be a good question. And they don't use the river because the depth is not dependable, and the amount of water in the river is dependable from month to month and season to season. Whereas with the locks and the reservoirs, they can control the level of the water. Why the canals were developed and used for practical purposes, and also now why they're used for recreation. But I do find it fascinating that we were going over a bridge that held water over a river. But beautiful aqueduct. Thing like, if you've seen the aqueducts that the Romans built, obviously it's the same principle. But in terms of design, it's very French, very Gustave Eiffel, very much of that time period with the lacy metalwork and decorative elements, slightly ornate decorative elements at the beginning and at the end of the aqueduct. Very interesting architecture. We spent the night in the town just where this aqueduct is and had a chance to stroll along it for a little bit before dinner and watch the sunset over the aqueduct. And then the next morning, before we actually cruised the aqueduct, we went into town to the local market, which was just maybe not even a quarter mile away, to do some shopping with our chef. And we helped her, well, She guided us to, we know what we might want to have for lunch and dinner that day. And as you might expect in a French market, you had beautiful produce and you had the cheesemonger and you had the sausage and meat seller and the fruit vendor. And then also a couple of stands with people selling clothes and trinkets and things like that, but it was really mostly about the food. So we picked out some cheeses and we picked out the meat for that night's dinner and some of the veggies for meals for that evening. And then before leaving town, we went into the local church, a beautiful little church. Okay, you're going to have to help me here with the pronunciation again. Église Saint-Étienne de Briard.
Okay.
And not really a typical Gothic church like you might expect in France, smaller scale, different design. But what really made this one stand out were the very detailed mosaics, both on the outside that decorated the outside of the church, and then also inside. I don't know about you, but really like visiting churches because they're a form of art, and each one is different. Each one is always beautiful. And so I really enjoy going in there and seeing the level of artistry and craftsmanship in particular that has gone into building some of these old churches. So it's always something that's fun for me anyway. So then after our shopping excursion and a little bit of taste testing at the market, we cruised slowly across the aqueduct and with a glass of champagne or two as we were slowly cruising by. And I have to tell you, our captain was fantastic. The barge just fits. He might have had a few inches space on either side of the aqueduct, on either side of the barge. And he guided it in there perfectly, just like a hand inside a glove. And we just cruised slowly down the aqueduct and had people taking photos of us as we were doing this, because it's a pretty special event to see one of these barges going across this.
And we haven't talked about the size of the barges, but they tend to be, I'd say, 15, 17 feet across and 100 feet long. So rather awkward shape in terms of trying to navigate it someplace. Obviously, most of the canal, you're just going straight, so you don't really have to navigate, but they're an interesting craft built to fit these canals. Exactly. And they just fit.
Exactly. They do just fit. Even in the locks, there might have only been a few inches on each side. The captain steers it from the back, and he's got big rear view mirrors on either side by his steering wheel and that he was using to help guide him. And then he had Brian in the front, who would also help make sure that he was going in straight enough. But it was very impressive that I think there were hardly any bumps most of the time that we went into each of these locks. And we would go through 5, 6, 7, 8, a dozen locks a day. So this was, it was an exercise in patience, which is one reason why it's such a slow travel, because they just have to go slowly. But it definitely is a skill to captain and drive one of these.
Excellent. Well, I think you're finishing up your itinerary here.
Yes. So that was our last day. That was the end of our denouement. We finished. So we parked for the day that afternoon after we went through the canal, through the aqueduct. And we had one final excursion. And this one was to the Chateau de Ratelier. And again, if you ever imagine or draw a storybook castle, or you build a sand castle, this is what it would look like. Towers, the moat is now dry, but there's a moat around it, big walls. It was built in the 13th century and pretty much still looks like it from that time period. What's interesting about this particular castle isn't just the castle, but the story behind it, which is that in the 1950s, an artistic couple, Jean and Norbert Pirlo, purchased the chateau because they wanted to turn it into sort of an artist-in-residence type facility where they were potters, they put in a pottery workshop, they wanted to provide artistic instruction and exhibition space. They've done that, and they've succeeded at doing it, and they've also, in the process, restored much of the castle. And now it's still used as a place for making pottery, which they sell, and as an event space. As a matter of fact, when we were walking through, they were setting up for a wedding. They have music festivals there. They have films and obviously also art exhibits. Really interesting, I think, melding of something old and ancient and putting it to good modern use in an artistic way that I found very enjoyable. And then to cap off that day, we had a little surprise when we got back to the boat. We had a jazz trio that met us on the boat and played music for us for an hour. And again, while we had some more wine and goodies as we were listening. So that was extremely enjoyable. And then we finished off with the captain's dinner, which is certainly one of the best meals of the cruise. Of a lot of
versus all those other meals, which were, I'm guessing, equally wonderful.
They were all wonderful. Yes, all wonderful. Very good. Yes.
And I said earlier, I joked that there's a dirty, thankless job, but somebody has to do it. I don't think we mentioned that you were there in your capacity as a travel writer, as a guest of European Waterways. People probably figured that out, but we should say that up front.
Yeah.
Or I guess it's no longer up front, but we should say that clearly. What else should people know about this experience before they go book their own barge cruise?
I've done one in the Loire Valley. I've done one on the Burgundy Canal, or part of the Burgundy Canal. You mentioned you've done one on the Canal de Midi. European Waterways has, I believe, about a dozen barges in France that they take throughout in a variety of canals throughout France, but then they also do them in other parts of Europe. They have a in Scotland. I think they have one in Ireland. They have one in Italy. So their itinerary varies both by season and by location. And each one, I'm sure, is different and equally wonderful. And it would certainly be a very tough job to have to try every single one just to be able to report on it.
I'm willing to volunteer if they need someone, though.
Yes, that makes two of them. Yeah. And as I said, they do a wonderful job. Very personal service. Just a really, for me, as we've mentioned, it's maybe not for everybody, but it's a very nice combination of that downtime, something to do, good food, good drink, and even better if you've got good company. Each time I've been fortunate that the other folks on the barge were very interesting and we had good conversations. But if you go with your friends, I'm sure you would have a wonderful time. Oh, and yes, I forgot to mention, and I don't think you mentioned it either, at least the two barges I've been on have a hot tub.
So, oh, yes.
Don't forget the hot tub. So as you're cruising, you've got to sit there with a glass of wine in the hot tub going down the canal. It's a tough
one. Did our cruise very early in the season. It was actually the first cruise of the season, and it was still a little chilly. So I think I'm the only one who went in the hot tub just because somebody had to. But
what else? We talked about bikes. So they pick you up and they drop you off. For both cruises that I did with them, it was in Paris, round trip to and from Paris. And everything is included in the cruise other than the gratuities. That would not be included. But otherwise, there are no other charges.
All the excursions are included. The wine is included.
The wines, any other. And it's not just wine, so I keep mentioning wine. But I'm actually not a big wine drinker. I'm a big alcohol drinker. But any cocktails you would want, there's top shelf. Their bar is well stocked with top shelf alcohol. They can make whatever you are interested in. And there were lots of juices and sodas and sparkling water and regular water and really anything that you want to drink. And obviously more than enough food. Excellent.
Excellent. Yep. We're going to get to some of our wrap-up questions here. You were in the prettiest spot on the Canal de Bruyère. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Oh, that's okay. That's a tough one because each time we moored, it was pretty. But I would say the evening that we were docked in the lakes, in the Gazon Lake,
okay,
because at that point it's more of a lake than a canal. It's wider, and it's just all open greenery, and it just felt like I was in the middle of a nature preserve. And it was just very peaceful and very quiet, and just water and sky and greenery around me. That's what I enjoy.
And one thing that makes you laugh and say, only on a canal cruise.
Ooh. I don't know about laugh, but maybe makes me feel good. And that's biking along on the towpath, inevitably going to pass other locals biking by. And every single time, would always get a lovely little bonjour from everybody biking by me. So the reputation that sometimes the French have of being aloof and cool definitely does not
apply. A lot of Americans get that cool reception because they don't know the protocol. For instance, when you go into a shop in a French shop, you always say bonjour. And if you don't, you're the rude one. Right. If you wonder why they're aloof, you may have already messed up and not done the greeting when you came in, especially in these small towns where that's more expected. Excellent. Our guest again has been Rose Palmer from quilttripping.com. And you've got to tell me, why are you quilt tripping? It sounds like guilt tripping, but no, it's the word quilt.
My tagline, if you've looked at my website, is that life is a patchwork of experiences. And it's quilt tripping because my website and my blog is all about my passions. And my passions are travel and photography and quilting. And I try to combine these three elements in whatever way possible. I can't always bring the quilting piece into it. But certainly travel and photography always blend together very well. And occasionally I will bring a quilt into the process because one of the things I like to do is make quilts that are inspired by my travel destinations, design them, make them, and then I'll bring them on my trips and photograph them on location and then share the photos with my audience and on my blog and on my social media. And my blog is all about what I love to do. I'm retired. And now it's my turn to just follow my passions.
Excellent. And I'll put a link to Rose's article about this trip on her, and I will say it for you, award-winning blog. Rose has received a number of awards from both NACHA, the North American Travel Journalism Association, and IFTWA, the International Food, Wine, Travel Writers Association. And check out that link in the show notes. And Rose, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for France, for barge cruising, and for this little corner of France here that you've covered here on your barge.
Thank you so much for inviting me to talk about one of my favorite means of travel that I'm always happy to both share and to do as much as I can.
A special thanks to all of the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you're interested in becoming a patron of the show, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. If you haven't already subscribed to the Amateur Traveler, we've got some interesting shows coming up for you. The next four shows are going to be on Fiji, on Wisconsin, on Uganda, and on Tamil Nadu in India. So I'm hoping you'll subscribe and catch all those when they come out. I'm still waiting on details for this year's Amateur Traveler trip to Japan in September, but I did get a quote for the next year's trip in late April to northern Morocco. If you're interested in learning more, go to amateurtraveler.com/trips. For the show that we did recently on Malaysia, I heard from Justin Barnes, who's actually going to be a guest on next week's show on Fiji, who said, one other recommendation for when near Kuala Lumpur, there are lots of evening/afternoon tours that go out to Kuala Selangor for some sightseeing, dinner, and then a firefly tour after dark before returning to KL that night. I remember it being a nice change-up from the city. Thanks so much, Justin. And Sam wrote and said, excellent podcast. Now I want to go to Malaysia. My work here is done. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.
I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should